Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor in 2020.
Do you think religious institutions like colleges, churches, charities, should they lose their tax-exempt status if they oppose same-sex marriage?
Yes.
And what is the system of values that can sustain human social life? The fact is that no secular creed has emerged capable of performing the role of religion.
Getting them set up and ready for their abortion procedures and trying to feed them through that conveyor belt that they call healthcare.
Our primary reason for praying for the sick is that they not lose faith. That is the main purpose, that they're preserved from every assault of the evil one as they go through this particular infirmity.
Hello, this is Will from Michigan, and I'm a Lutheran high school teacher and football coach, and I love beginning my day listening to Issues Etc. All right, guys, let's go.
Do you find it surprising or even perhaps alarming how quickly those who advocated for abortion have gone from safe, legal, and rare to shout your abortion or the latest hashtag I have seen surrounding one OBGYN's Twitter rant, Jen Gunter, is abortion is fun. Does that surprise you that perhaps this giddy attitude toward abortion has come so quickly? How do we account for it? And for the ignorance, well, perhaps not the ignorance, the denial of the facts when it comes to the unborn themselves. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, October the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us for the first half hour. We're going to be talking about abortion advocate Jen Gunter's statements about the unborn. A little bit later, we'll discuss an Illinois school district's response to parental complaints about an LGBT curriculum for preschoolers. Joy Pullman will be our guest. And then in hour two of Issues Etc., our series on introducing the books the Bible continues today. It's the book of Acts with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Joining us to talk about abortion advocate Jen Gunter's statements about the unborn, Pastor Hans Feeney, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Why Abortion Apologists Like Jen Gunter Keep Lying About Babies and Christians. Hans, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Tell us about this recent barrage of tweets from OBGYN Jennifer Gunter.
Yeah, so she appears to be responding to something that set her off on this point. I don't know if there's a piece of legislation that was proposed that I missed or something of that nature. But her initial tweet is as following. She wrote, "A fetus is not a baby. A fetus is not an unborn or a preborn baby or child. If your goal is to legislate medical care, you have to use medical terminology." And then she goes on to say, "I will expletive deleting-ing call you out each and every time." And then on top of that, she had some strange kind of follow-ups on the thread where she said, "Preborn sounds like you birthed it for a bit and then put it back in the uterus." And she said, "It is a fetus, not a pie shell. And unborn baby is a zombie baby. The undead have unborn babies." So we're dealing with a terribly serious line of argumentation here. So then after that, she responded to a fellow by the name of Greg Locke, who's a pastor with sort of a checkered past at some evangelical congregation, who wrote, "How's this for medical terminology? You are a psychopathic murderer. You're mentally unstable and a danger to babies worldwide. You're a lying demonic drama queen." To which Dr. Gunter responded, "It's not medical terminology, thanks for playing, but while we are here, tell me how you have devoted your life to providing free prenatal care, banning tobacco, and ending racism, or are you selective about your devotion to fetal life?" And then someone had asked her if anyone who is responding to all of her comments had basically answered the question for how it is that they've helped protect pregnant women and babies, to which she responded no, just sort of categorically ruling out any evidence that there was for pro-life people committing themselves to the cause of providing care for mothers and babies.
So let's begin with the terminology, beginning with fetus. If I were to either look it up in a medical dictionary, or if I were to go to, say, a local medical school and ask what the word, just please tell me what this word I hear all the time, fetus, means, what would I actually find, notwithstanding the comments of this OBGYN?
Right. Well, what you'd find is that fetus is, I mean, it is a medical term, but its origin is not some kind of cold, unfeeling, sort of morally neutral category. A fetus is just simply the Latin word for offspring. So it's a term we use. So it's a medical term, or however you want to kind of view it, it's a term we use to describe a human being at a certain stage of development. So it's not fundamentally any different than, say, using the term newborn to describe a baby who's just been born, or you know, the term toddler to describe a child who's, you know, 18 months old. So it's just simply a term that you use to describe this is the human being at this stage of development.
I think what she means to say, leaving behind her medical education, obviously, is that what the pro-choice community wants fetus to mean is not a baby. What do you think, huh?
Right. Yeah. There seems to be this very odd understanding of how words work. And as a very proud English major who read almost 35% of the assigned reading that I was given during my time in college, I'm uniquely qualified to let Dr. Gunter know that words don't impart meaning. They may reflect meaning. Words may reflect how it is that we view something, but they don't grant meaning to something. They don't determine what something is. So that's simply not the way that language works. So the idea that a fetus is not a living human being and not a person worthy of protection and honor and dignity and all that stuff, because fetus isn't the same word as baby, is just preposterous. In the same way that we would that if you were to argue that a toddler isn't worthy of protection, isn't worthy of having his life protected, because toddler and human being are different words. It's just an absolutely absurd argument to make.
Now, you say that the reason she's denying the simple truth and indeed definitions of words is because she doesn't like the implications of what those words actually mean. What do you mean?
So this is, I think, something that every sinner in the world does to some extent in his or her life, which is that we determine whether or not we accept the truth of things based on the consequences of that thing being true. So in the article, I give the example of, for those of us who use the one-year lectionary, what was our gospel reading for yesterday, which is Jesus in kind of his last theological showdown with the Pharisees. And he asks them this question about whose son the Christ is. And they say he's David's son, and Jesus says, well, then why does David call him Lord? In Psalm 110, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand. So in other words, what Jesus is saying here is, look, you guys are angry at me. You hate me because you know I've been claiming to be the Son of God. Well, the scriptures definitively teach that the Messiah, the Christ, is in fact the Son of God, that David's son is also God's son, that David's son is David's Lord. So therefore, because I've just spent the last 3 years proving that I'm the Messiah through all of my miracles and through casting out demons and raising the dead and all that stuff, by proving to you that I'm the Messiah, I've also proven to you that I am, in fact, the Son of God. And he defeats them so soundly in this debate that they don't even bother questioning him anymore. And yet they walk away from the conversation more determined than ever to put Christ to death. And it's only a few days later that they succeed in doing that. So kind of the whole point of this is that they have all this mountain of evidence in front of them that what Jesus is saying is true. But because they don't like the implications of that, because Jesus being the Messiah means, and being the Son of God means, that they're going to lose all of their credibility and all of their standing amongst the community. They're no longer going to be the religious elite. And most importantly, they're going to lose all of the glory and honor that they imagine that they have gained for themselves by obeying the law. They're going to have to give up all of that by acknowledging that they actually need a savior, and they need God to come into the flesh to be their savior. So they just simply don't want to do those things. They don't want those things to be true. So they just ignore the mountain of evidence that's in front of them. And you can see this going on here as well, where in kind of a couple of ways. So you have this mountain of evidence that life does in fact begin at conception. So this really isn't, medically speaking or scientifically speaking, a controversial point. But the people who are abortion apologists don't like the implication of that. They don't like the fact that, well, if life in fact does begin at conception, if this is in fact a human being worthy of being treated the same way that I do, then that means I'm guilty of perpetuating murder. It means that I've been on the wrong side of this issue. It means that all of those awful people that I hate, that I want to be morally superior to, they were actually right about this. And so you just simply treat that mountain of evidence like it's not there. And she does the same thing with regard to just kind of dismissing the mountain of evidence of the charitable work of Christians and of the church, where you just treat it as though, you know, there aren't all these Christian hospitals around, and there aren't these Christian-run crisis pregnancy centers and soup kitchens and food banks and programs like we have at my church, the Swaddling Clothes Program that my wife runs, that gives free diapers and wipes and strollers and clothes and stuff like that to young families in need. You just act like that stuff doesn't exist, because if you acknowledge it, you're going to have to acknowledge that people who identify as pro-life do actually care about the unborn beyond the abortion issue. They do care about providing help and medical care for mothers and young children. And if you have to concede that, then you kind of lose that whole bad faith argument you've been making the whole time, that you don't need to take their argument seriously. You don't need to consider whether or not abortion really is murder, because these people are just acting in bad faith and they're just simply trying to control women's bodies.
And even if she were right, even if no pro-lifer or Christian ever helped the poor in any way whatsoever, was completely callous to this and only held their pro-life views as an entirely sterile opinion that they hold and don't even really care about mother or child, it still wouldn't change the fact that the fetus is a baby.
Right. Yeah, that's obviously the kind of the important thing here, is that Christians can always do better. We can always be more committed to the pro-life cause. And there are plenty of church-going folks who aren't sufficiently committed to it. But that doesn't change the fact, whether Christians do what they should do or not, doesn't change the fact that when you have the union of a sperm and an egg, you have the creation of a new genetic human code, you have the creation of new human life, and you have new human life that is valuable and worthy in the eyes of God, and that it deserves, that human life deserves to be protected. So the supposed hypocrisy of Christians doesn't change that. But of course, the reason that's such an appealing argument to people is because it allows you to push away all of the other evidence that you don't want to be there, all the scientific evidence, all of the moral and spiritual evidence as well.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about abortion advocate Jen Gunter's statements about the unborn when we come back. I wonder if he's surprised at the speed with which the advocates for abortion have doubled down to the point of celebrating abortion. The new Portals of Prayer devotional Bible is the Issues Etc. book of the month for October. This devotional resource contains the entire English Standard Version of the Bible with 700 devotions from Portals of Prayer. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or learn more about Portals of Prayer devotional Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month for October, Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible.
You know what lasts forever? God's Word. Everything else fails, but not His Word. It holds and delivers exactly what He promises. His Word is so solid and lasting, you can build your life and hope of eternity on it. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, a daily, verse-by-verse Bible study with the church, past and present. It all starts Reformation Day, October 31st. Learn more at thewordendures.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about abortion advocate Jen Gunter's statements about the unborn. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shawnahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's a senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled Why Abortion Apologists Like Jen Gunter Keep Lying About Babies and Christians. One of the features of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, the Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible, is that it pairs these Portals of Prayer devotions with the text that you're actually looking at there in this devotional Bible. A good example, the raising of Lazarus, right next to it, a Portals of Prayer devotion, Lazarus come out forever. It's a commentary on the text, but it's also a devotional resource. You can find out more about the Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Give them a call, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. When you call, make sure you ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. Hans, I wonder, are you surprised how the abortion advocates have continued to double down, especially in the last couple of years, to the point now where they are speaking of abortion as a positive good, urging people to shout and celebrate their abortions? There's even a hashtag that attends much of Jen Gunter's Twitter activity, hashtag abortion is fun.
Yeah, there was a piece I wrote for The Federalist a couple of years ago, I think called The End of Abortion Moderates, which kind of tackles that issue. And the point I make there is that for a long time, both the right and the left on the abortion issue were basically approaching things the same way, which was to say that abortion was sad, but it was a question of, is having an abortion sadder than what happens if you don't have it? So for example, you had the kind of the Bill Clinton era where they would say, we want abortion to be legal, safe, and rare. So we recognize this isn't a good thing. We recognize this is bad. But a scenario in which a woman who doesn't want to have a baby, who's going to be living in poverty, who's already has three kids that she can barely take care of, well, that's sadder than the idea of that child growing up in an abusive household. That's even sadder than the idea of an abortion. So legalized abortion should kind of trump in those circumstances. And you'd have conservatives who would say, no, in those certain circumstances, having an abortion is still sadder because you're taking a human life. But don't worry, I'm opposed to abortion. I'm in favor of legalized abortion in cases of rape and incest. So in other words, if it's not your fault that you were pregnant, well, forcing a woman to have a baby that was conceived through rape is sadder than actually aborting that baby. So therefore, that's why I favor these exceptions. And what I think has been happening in recent years is that both sides have kind of realized that's not really a tenable position to take. Because if abortion is terrible, if it's evil, if it's morally wicked, then you're just going to naturally gravitate away from supporting it, even in these sort of wild, these kind of wild extreme cases, which make up a very small percentage of abortions. Likewise, if your predisposition is to defend the legality of abortion, what you eventually realize is that if you concede that abortion is sad, you've undercut your entire argument, because people will eventually follow that to its logical conclusion. And they'll say, actually, growing up in poverty is not worse than killing an innocent human being. And so I think what you've certainly found on the left is that they recognize that the whole legal, safe, and rare mantra, which I think I've seen Dr. Gunter make this exact argument online, is that whole legal, safe, and rare mantra is detrimental to the pro-abortion position because it indicates that there's something morally flawed about abortion, and that therefore is going to draw people away from endorsing it. So instead of saying that abortion is something we need to tolerate or that we need to live with, we say that abortion is something that we need to celebrate. It's good. It's empowering. If that's what a woman wants to do, then she has stepped forward in life and claimed rights to her body. And so kind of it's just the idea of bodily autonomy above all, and no exceptions, no sort of philosophical dents in that argument.
How long can that approach to abortion survive the reality that is abortion? A woman who says, yeah, I went to the rally and they told me abortion is fun and it's a way of celebrating my womanhood and that it's a positive good. It's a positive good for me and for everyone involved, except, of course, for the baby. Then she finds herself in a position where she is in the abortion clinic, saddest place on the face of the planet. And she's faced with the reality of what she has done. She's faced with the reality of abortion. How long can the happy abortion movement survive in the face of reality?
Yeah, not very long. I mean, the reality is this is kind of one of these arguments people make that we all know nobody believes, and the people who are making the argument, we know that they don't believe it. So in a little, it's sort of to me like the transgender arguments, right? Where people will say to you, there's been this thing going around lately that not everyone who menstruates is a woman. And you go, okay, well, I recognize the philosophical mindset that you're coming from there, but that's stupid, and we all know that you don't actually believe that. You're just saying that because you think those are the proper words for you to say in order for you to be a righteous person, but you know that that's not actually the case. And I think this is what you deal with in this issue, is that I think just generally speaking in life, the more loudly people assert a certain belief, the less they actually sincerely believe it. And it's almost like they're just trying to kind of shout over their doubt and their guilt and their grief. And I think, yeah, the example that you give is very true. Is that, you know, if you've ever been in a maternity wing, which I imagine most of the listeners have been, it's a joyful place to be. You know, they play the little lullaby song every time a baby is born. And there's balloons and flowers all around, and you can tell that there's a sense of life in there. And you could try to manufacture that in an abortion clinic, but it's not real. Everyone knows it's not real. Everyone knows this is a tragic, awful thing. And telling ourselves that we're proud of this and we're so proud of ourselves for empowering ourselves to have abortions, all that we're really doing there is just turning up the volume of our own defiance and our own, just trying to drown out the sound of our own guilt.
To what degree has abortion, at least at this point, begun both philosophically and morally to consume both progressivism and in particular kind of the feminist impulse that started it all?
Yeah, I think this is something you see very clearly in the political realm, which is that no matter what your politics, no matter how you view any other number of issues, there is no place for you in the progressive left if you are our supporter of the pro-life movement. So you could be in favor of Medicare for all, you could be in favor of gay marriage, you could be in favor of the Green New Deal, all of that stuff. But if you assert that life begins at conception and therefore those who are unborn children deserve the right to exit the womb alive, you are persona non grata. You're just simply not welcome. And that, I think that really is just simply the starting off point. It's the key doctrine. It's the material principle for the secular left. The right to abortion is the source of everything. And no matter how sympathetic you might be on every other progressive issue, you just simply don't get to be a part of the club if that's the case. And I think we've seen this so clearly. You know, for example, a couple of years ago, when David DeLayden and his group were releasing the undercover Planned Parenthood videos, where it was they made it abundantly clear that this was an organization that was trafficking in the organs of unborn children that they had slaughtered. And there was kind of this hope in the air, I suppose, at least in the pro-life movement, that this would finally wake people up. And it didn't work. And I think in large part it didn't work, but beyond, you know, maybe some few anecdotal examples to the contrary. And it just didn't work simply because Planned Parenthood owns the Democratic Party. They own the political left, and they gave them their talking points, and everybody filed in line, and their allies in the media filed in line, and everyone just simply repeated the talking points. And for those who maybe don't fit, those people who would identify as kind of broadly pro-life, but aren't terribly sympathetic to the Republican Party, aren't terribly politically conservative, I think either found themselves in a position where they just had nowhere to go, or they just found themselves in a position where they said, well, I'm pro-life, but not enough to actually vote that way. You know, not enough to actually do kind of the hard work of tearing my political base down to the ground and rebuilding it from the ground up.
Another feature that has emerged recently among pro-abortion advocates has been kind of the rage factor, along with the quite insincere giddiness about how happy they are for having had an abortion. There's a lot of anger there too. How do you explain the anger, Hans?
Yeah, I think, again, kind of like what I was saying earlier, that the more you're screaming about something being true, the more you're really probably trying to convince yourself that it's true while you know that it's not actually. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here. I think a lot of what moves modern feminism, I've often joked that Lutheranism and feminism are similar in that you're all constantly trying to convince someone to convert to a worldview that makes you miserable. And I mean that as a joke, obviously, for Lutherans, just because we tend to sometimes be a little bit grumpy and a little impatient with people, I suppose. But that really is genuinely the case with feminism, is that it doesn't make them happy. And I think the thing that really really frustrates them is that they know that. In a lot of ways, I've theorized that all of the ladies wearing hats meant to represent a particular body part at these various rallies since Donald Trump's election. You know, a lot of times these are suburban housewives, you know, go into these things who lead pretty comfortable lives and have never really had their happiness infringed upon by men in any kind of meaningful sense, certainly not men in positions of political power. And it's kind of hard to understand what was so attractive to that. And in a lot of ways, I think it's just that you have a lot of women who went off to college and took these classes from their gender studies professors, and they were taught that they were supposed to hate everything about kind of domestic, traditional housewife type of life. And then they went off and they got married and they had kids, and that actually made them happy, and it made them happier than working jobs perhaps, and it made them happier than certainly the idea of not having those things. And I think they sort of made them feel like sellouts. And so this is a way for them to kind of cosplay as still being gender studies majors. And I think that's just a lot of what modern feminism is it's constantly trying to convince women that they don't want the things that will make them happy, that they don't want marriage, that they don't want children, that they don't want a life that's rooted in serving their children and in loving their husbands and being connected in that sense. And the reality is that they know that if they lose converts to that side, it's going to be very difficult to get them to come back. So I think in a lot of ways, feminism is just a movement that is animated by a profound sense of anger and bitterness that people found happiness in the things that you tried to get them to hate and tried to get them to reject.
Finally, Hans, this kind of denial, both of the facts on the part of Jennifer Gunter, she should know better because her embryology textbook should teach her better, you know, that kind of stuff she should have learned before she went to medical school. But also the denial in a moral sense, that is both psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually damaging over time. Is there a better way, if you had 5 minutes, to speak with her about her recent tirade of tweets about the babies in the womb? Would you present something better than perpetual denial?
Yeah, I think, you know, the question you kind of want to ask people in those circumstances is, well, if it's not a baby, what is it? And just kind of trying to focus on that and saying, all right, well, you got this thing made of living tissue and you got cells dividing and it's growing. And so that it's definitely not dead and it's definitely not inanimate. You know, it's not a rock. It's definitely a living thing. And it's made out of human DNA, and only humans are made out of human DNA. And the DNA that it's made out of is not the mother's DNA. It has received genetic information from the mother's DNA, but it's its own unique genetic coding. So what is it? And then if you get into the argument of, well, it's a human life, but it's not a person, is to just say, okay, well, tell me about that distinction. Where do you get this distinction between what is a human life and what's a person? So which human beings are just human beings and not people, and which ones are actually people? And if you can kind of look at, you know, those examples throughout history, you go, well, that distinction between human but and person, and this category of human but not a person, that seems to be a really convenient category throughout history that just only shows up when we're trying to justify the thing that we've already been doing, when we're trying to justify slavery, when we're trying to justify ethnic cleansing, when we're trying to justify the Holocaust, and when we're trying to justify abortion. So likewise, I think to just kind of look at that and then say, so, you know, and likewise, if there is a God, and if in fact Jesus is his son, if what the scriptures have told us is true, what do you think God's response to this would be? And I think a lot of times you get from people just a refusal to answer that question, but a lot of times what you would get from people is essentially this continued defiance, and to just say, I don't care. I don't care if God says that this is wrong. This is where I think I find meaning and value in life. And, you know, kind of if you get to that point, you just sort of say, well, we've kind of reached the point where all you can do is pray for someone who's clearly under the spell of demons. But if not, if you're able to get people to think about those things a bit more, that's when you ultimately would be able to make the segue into saying, look, you don't have to keep doing this. You don't have to keep maintaining this position. I know that you think that if you admit that you are wrong, that there's going to be this massive humiliation that you're going to endure, and that you're going to put yourself in a position where God couldn't possibly want to forgive you. But that's not what you have waiting for you on the other side of repenting. What you have waiting for you are the hands of your father, the arms of your father, who wants to embrace you and call you his own child again through the blood of Jesus Christ. So that's what you have looking forward to. So you don't need to live in this state of just perpetual angry denial, thinking that that's how you're going to ward off the judgment of God. The judgment of God has already been warded off through the blood of Jesus Christ.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Why Abortion Apologists Like Jen Gunter Keep Lying About Babies and Christians. You can read it on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
My pleasure.
On the other side of the break on this Monday afternoon, Joy Pullman of The Federalist joins us. We'll talk about an Illinois school district responding to parental complaints about an LGBT curriculum for their preschoolers.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things: the love of Christ, and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us: broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.